So, but, with your black eye, you arrived near the ground.
Yeah.
So, well, where did you actually land?
We landed in Southeast China, but not at not close to the place that we were supposed to.
Right.
We had drifted across a mountain range to the north, everybody bailed out successfully. The next day, we all had a compass and started walking west. Knowing that if we should go into the east, that we were more liable to be picked up by the Japanese.
Right. But before you get to that, when you landed in your parachute, where did you land? Where'd you wind up for the night?
The only thing I can remember about that, the Chinese said it was a Tain Mushan, I thought it was a place, but I learned later that Tain Mushan was a kind of a name that they named most mountains. But anyway.
But did you and a tree somehow get together?
Yeah, we were all together by the next evening.
Right.
Yeah.
John, where did he wind up at the end of his parachute jump?
I do believe you were hanging in a tree. Did your chute catch on a tree? And you were hanging, so it did break your fall.
So you spent the night in the tree?
Yeah, I spent the night in the tree. I didn't sleep, but I know I dozed off. I was about 12 feet high, but it was so foggy I couldn't see the ground.
So you then, with your compass, tried to find other of your shipmates. When did you run into anybody else, and who was it?
I walked all day, and I only saw three people. Two students that, I guess they were students, they were doing Chinese, that I didn't make any kind of offering to get close to him, and the other one was a woodcutter, and he could have cared less. About evening, I came out on a cliff, and down below was a little military Chinese cantonment that had the national flag flying over it. So I walked down there, and a young man, a Chinese soldier, accosted me, and he took me to a building. In the building, there was nothing but a table and a couple of chairs. But on the table was a sketch of a two-tailed airplane with five parachutes coming out of it.
Wow.
And I finally got him to take me where he took the guy that drew the sketch. We walked for another near couple hundred yards, and in this building went another building. But by that time it was pretty dark, and they were lighting the inside of the building with candles, and it looked like an overcast when you went in the smoke and stuff. And I could see a shadow over here, and I couldn't distinguish who it was. But all at once they lighted two or three more candles, and it turned out to be Colonel Doolittle. And I said, "Boy, am I glad to see you." And he greeted me and said happy I wasn't injured and so forth.
Right.
But Later on, some Chinese loyal to
Chiang Kai-shek.
Chiang Kai-shek brought in Paul Leonard and Fred Bremer and Hank Potter.
So the five of you.
So we were all together that night.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Jana, what did your grandfather feel? I'm here at this point. Here they've survived. They've hit their targets. They've survived. They're in good hands for the time being. Anyway, what was your grandfather's attitude about what they had done that day and that night?
You know, the truth was he thought it was a failure. There's a picture of him that was taken by Paul Leonard. It's on the side of the mountain. He's sitting on the wing, and his B-25 is in pieces. Now, it was his first mission. Even though he served in World War I, he never served in combat. So all 80 men, their first mission. And he knows at this point in time that he has lost all of his aircraft. He has no idea where anybody but his crew is. And so he's thinking that, you know, he's going to end up in Leavenworth. It wasn't until after the raid that they discovered the impact.
Right. So, Dick, at this point, the five of you are together. And how did you get into good hands, and where did you go at that point?
Yeah. Well, we finally, Colonel Doolittle was bent, I guess you could call it that, on trying to find out where all the crews were and what kind of condition they were in. And we finally were taken to a place where they had a telephone. You know, the Flying Tigers had set up a telephone net for their flyers, and he used their telephone system to try and find out where everybody was. And he wasn't about to leave until he knew enough information that he could feel comfortable with for the rest of the crew.
He was a commander.
Yeah.
The commander. So how long did it take you? Where did you wind up? In Burma or in China?
No, we ended up in Chongqing, which was the provisional capital at that time. Of course, there the 10th Air Force was trying to run the war from New Delhi, India, and communication was, it was zero practically. And, he found that he was given some money, ransom money, and we spent time trying to ransom the crews that were captured, and he had some help from John Birch that we happened to run into, it didn't work out. So
right, Jana, how many crews did actually get back in good hands?
Well, let's see, three members died that night, one bailing out, two drowned, eight were captured by the Japanese. Three of those were executed by firing squad. One basically was starved to death. Those four men that survived came home at the end of the war. One crew went to Russia. There's always going to be a question about that crew. But they were interned for 15 months before they escaped through Persia. And the rest of the raiders made it across China and into different assignments, some in Burma with Dick, some back in the States. So really only seven died as a direct result of the war. Everybody else either made it back into one of the other theaters or home.
You might have thought that after pulling this off, that these guys who survived, you know, they'd bring them home and sell war bonds or whatever. And yet, what did you do?
Originally, we were told that if we survived the mission, we'd get to come home. But You know how that goes. It ended up there were 26 of us that didn't receive orders to come home, and being there was better than Leavenworth. So,
so you flew the hump. I mean, you were flying.
About that time, they would put out a call for pilots to go on the air link that they established between India and China. The higher-ups wanted to make sure that China was kept in the link.
Yep.
And so they commandeered quite a few C-54 passenger planes from Braniff and sent them over to that area, along with any of the pilots that were reserve officers. There were six of us decided that we'd like to get hooked up into the process of going back and forth in China, that's what I did.
And Mike, there's so much more to his story. And Sleeping Dogs Productions did an hour documentary that was shown earlier on the Jumbotron. That's available online to get much more detail of the story. And it all comes, you know, firsthand from Dick about the rest of his career, which was absolutely phenomenal. It wasn't just this one raid. It was what followed, Jonna.
I was going to say, they say that the raid was dangerous, but flying the hump was equally, that aluminum highway was equally as dangerous.
What would your grandfather be thinking about Dick and his 78 colleagues?
I have to tell you, he used to say it wasn't right to have favorites, but the Doolittle Raiders were his boys. I mean, I grew up with all these uncles that they truly loved, each and every one of them. You guys called my grandmother Mama Jo. You called Gramps the boss. And he made sure that they were taken care of in any way he could. They were just part of the family. And I think he'd be particularly proud to see you right now, Dick. Yeah. I think he's looking down and smiling.
Yeah, yeah, thank you.
When we complete our program, we're not done yet, but when we do complete it, Dick will be over in the bookstore and will not sign books. They're already signed, but have your cameras ready if you'd like to take a photograph with Dick. Also, Jonna will be there signing her biography of her grandfather, so you might want to take advantage of that after we finish the program. What we're going to do, Sam Bass is one of our colleagues here. He's going to do walk-arounds of these two aircraft with Evan Fagan and Doug Jeans and talk about, you know, these airplanes so that you can learn more about the B-25. And we'll do that in just a couple of minutes. We have time for just a couple of questions from the floor. Lady in the Straw Hat. And by the way, Lady in the Straw Hat, right there, has challenge coins for any of you that would like a challenge coins from this year's Warbirds. She is the lady to see after we finish the program. So, question?
Yes, could you tell us about the bomb site that was designed and used?
The bomb site. Dick, what was the bomb site that was designed and used on the raid?
Well, since Colonel Doolittle wanted to go at low altitudes, it was the Norden bomb site was one of the things that we took out of the airplane. Doing so, they took part of the autopilot. And we didn't know this until we were manhandling the airplane. Everything worked out okay.
The
bomb site that Ross Greening developed was they put a price on it, 25 cents to make. It was a protractor with a sliding thing, and it worked out very well.
Another question.